Louis, welcome to the Cider Show.
Thank you.
We have had quite a bit of stormy weather, so now we have a small waterfall running right by the background.
It's really clear, but it does sound like you're in a church, but I quite like it. It's kind of cool.
Excellent.
It's really my pleasure being here, and I was listening to some of your previous talks, and they were very, very interesting. So I'm really happy to be with you today. I see that you are very much into privacy and security. That of course fits very well on our project, right? After all, public health should always be bound to individual and collective freedom and privacy, right? And that's unfortunately is not the case in many, many countries. And probably one of the main reasons we started, or I started the GNU Health project, was specifically for that, right? So we try to have something that gives dignity to people, both at individual and collective level, right? And I usually said that GNU Health is a social project with a bit of technology behind, right? Because technology it's fine, it's also fun, but it has to somehow serve a purpose, right? And
absolutely. Maybe the place that we could start is with the technology, and to talk about things like wearable sensors, smart watches, and things like that. So maybe imagine for listeners who have never encountered this technology, why is something like GNU Health important, and what kind of devices does it interface to?
So we started GNU Health back in 2008. Where wearables, smartwatches, and all that stuff were not very common. The idea behind at that moment was more into the server side, providing physicians, healthcare providers, a system that they could manage primary healthcare. That was, like having a server that take care of a hospital management as well as public health management. Now, with time going, we start getting more smartphones and wearables, and we decided also to broaden the scope where it's not just only a hospital management information system or a lab information system, but also a personal health record. Right. So GNU Health broadened the scope from being a hospital information system to being a health information ecosystem. And that's where my GNU Health, which is the personal health record, allows you to track from the individual point of view, not from the physician point of view, your health. And that's where we are at today. One of the things, Andy and Helen, that we struggle a lot is by trying to have devices that are free as in freedom, right? Not just software, which of course is very important, but also we need to have free hardware. And that is quite hard, right? Because most of the devices, technology behind its proprietary. We don't have the schematics of that glucometer or that blood pressure reader. And that's where we are today. We want to not only deliver technology, but also deliver a message of, hey, you want to read your blood sugar level and send that information to your personal health record. Well, make sure that it's actually serving the purpose of what you want. And that information is not going to somebody else's, database.
Yes, yeah, that's really important. Okay, great. Let's talk about the issues of privacy.
So you're saying that security is a big part of what you do at GNU Health. What's the most important factor in keeping our health records safe? Because some people say, well, what does it matter if people find out my blood pressure? It's not important. It's not data that's useful. But actually, it's some of our most important data, isn't it, Leo?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, in the end, today is pretty much everything is about data, right? And, you know, think about Big Pharma, think about all the guys that will be taking that information, telling you stuff you need it or probably you don't. But in the end, it's insurance companies, you know, at the moment that they know underlying conditions of your health, vital signs, whatever vital signs, temperature, blood pressure, whatever, they can put that into their grinder and come up with whatever conclusions that they can affect you as a patient and you as an individual. Who knows? I'm a physician. I work on genetics. So if they get your genetic background or, you know, whatever natural variations or mutations that you may have, that will have a big impact in your life, in your work life, and in your social life. So that information should be yours and nobody else's. And it's up to you to share that information with whoever you want, but in a consent form, in a way that you know what's going on. Now, all these devices, or most of the devices that we have today, that have a way of sharing that information via Bluetooth or, you know, wireless or whatever, you don't really know what's going on behind the scenes. And that's why the devices that you will see that we are working with my GNU Health personal health record are the closest to free hardware, like the PinePhone or the PineTime. And now we're working with Vola and Vola tablets and so on. So not just the operating system that we're putting there, but also the hardware has to give me, you know, certainty or as close as certainty to make sure that that critical information related to my health in the widest sense of the term, right? Because it's not just about those vital signs, but also the socioeconomic conditions or determinants of health that I opt to include on my personal health record should remain private within my privacy ring or circle.
One definition of privacy is the ability to selectively disclose that we choose who we share our information with. And clearly, there are really good uses for others to know intimate personal data about us, physicians, doctors, that we choose to consult. And there are extreme dangers in having hostile actors being in possession of that data. Now, there's a huge market of data trading now. It's become an enormous industry, the surveillance capitalism. Now, I think it's fair to assume that most of those other actors are hostile. I think that the reasons that people don't treat them as hostile is their lack of knowledge about how powerful that health information is in their hands. One story that I heard about the American Secret Service, and indeed the FSB in Russia, is that whenever a president is visiting another country, they have a team, a cleanup team, that go around and they take their own personal toilet with them to make sure that no fingerprints or genetics or feces or urine is possible to sample it, because the agents in that country would do everything they could to obtain compromat, to obtain blackmail material on a foreign official.
Oh, yeah. I think that, I mean, and you bring up a very good and important point. In the end, I would even take it one step further in terms of not just in terms of national security, but we are choosing, or the people are choosing, pragmatism versus philosophy. And they don't think about when they put, you know, in Helmholtz or all these big tech companies that allow you to put your health information, or even when you go to a hospital and that information is stored in their databases. Those operating systems and those databases that exist there are private, are proprietary. So they are like huge black boxes that, yes, when they print something, they are giving you their clinical record on paper or in PDF, but you don't know what's going on behind the scenes in parallel to that information. So that is one side that is, it's very important in terms of, these security agencies and how they can actually get that information. But that's there, and they will keep trying to do their best or the worst in terms of violating our privacy as individuals. But there is even a bigger or greater threat to our privacy that has to do with these huge big tech companies that are actually taking care of that. And the problem with that is that the EU governments and our national governments legislate to allow that to happen. So public health cannot be in the hands of private companies. Just doesn't make sense, right? So that's why whenever they talk to us, remember the COVID pandemic, where they had these apps that, for contact tracing or whatever. If we say, but that was free software. Yeah, but how about the operating system? How about the underlying operating system that we have running that operation? You know, like Android or macOS or whatever. Yeah. If the operating system is non-free, whatever you put on top, it doesn't make any sense anymore. Yeah. That's something that we have to push our legislators to and educate them, saying, hey, this is a no-go from the start. No matter whatever you put on top of that, if the operating system is non-free, your privacy is at risk, or very much at risk.
Yeah,
and what you're saying, it makes a lot of sense. It's very dangerous, and now the whole big data is getting even worse.
And you say that, yeah, well, it doesn't make sense. But it certainly makes sense for big tech companies who buy this data, and I wonder if it makes sense for governments who have done deals with big tech companies, effectively to sell their nation's citizens' data in backroom deals and so on. I think it's fairly well known that proprietary operating systems like Microsoft Windows are completely insecure. In fact, a chief security officer in the US government said just a couple of days ago, Microsoft Cloud, he regarded it as a piece of shit. And that was the official position of that US security agency, that Microsoft is a piece of shit. Nonetheless, they recommended its use in government because the narrative was kind of that they had no choice but to do that. It was already so entrenched in official use that even though they considered it completely insecure, they couldn't recommend against it. And in the UK, we have at least as bad a problem, where Microsoft is deemed a preferred supplier because of economic dealings, because of corruption within the government, which means that Microsoft is always pushed to the front, even though we know that it's a very leaky operating system, even in its server form, and it really can't be trusted.
Yeah, it's like that. And in the end, it reduces to a bunch of very rich guys doing business, and they do business with health, and they do business with war. Those are the guys, they show up in the Epstein files, and they talk about being philanthropists and all that crap.
You're listening to The Cyber Show.
But here we are, small NGOs, trying to counteract that. by doing GNU Health, we are not just delivering technology, but we are also delivering a message of freedom and dignity in our societies. That second part is as important or even more important than the technology itself. I like to give talks more on social sciences faculties than computer science, because those ladies and gentlemen understand better the concept and the philosophy behind it. You know, in the end, yeah, technology, it's a great tool when used wisely and for the betterment of our societies. But when you see what's going on today, for example, with this new definition of AI, where again, they are trying to put health there and how good it is and blah, 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 it's really hurting us as a society and as a species, you know, and we have to fight for that. Remember the NHS ransomware attack that they had. They couldn't even do some surgeries because the system data files or whatever were encrypted and they were making money out of it. That was Microsoft's servers. And I see many of the EU governments just as proxies of these huge companies that, by the way, they are not even in Europe. They are in the States. Mm. And they are taking all our data. That is a fundamental problem that we have as a society. We have to somehow turn around that dynamics.
But that is changing. That is changing now in many ways. Recent political upheavals in the United States have led the European Commission to look closely at digital sovereignty. And so these questions are now, well, they're out. They're in the air.
And you say that, Andy, right? About the EU. However, in the UK, we just announced that we were going to potentially help fund the NHS by selling our data records of NHS patients back to the US to a big
company, right? We're extremely backwards and corrupt in the UK. No, I mean it. We have a very parochial government, and they're very insular, and they're very corrupt. But let's just look at the bigger picture, because that's important. We can't ignore what's happening in Europe, and it's going to influence us. So, you know, the European Commission are looking very closely at this whole US tech dominance, and, you know, the question about who you can trust with your data. And it's good that there's a movement towards sovereignty, data digital sovereignty. But, you know, we have to question, well, who is the sovereign in this case? What does sovereignty mean here? There's no point substituting one king for another. So the important point with GNU Health and the discussion that we're in at the moment is this maxim of trust but verify. And the question of who would you trust with your data? Ultimately, what something like GNU Health is doing is it's allowing you to be the custodian of the data. And the reason that you can trust yourself, at least with a minimal education or with a little bit of help, is that you can examine the source code. You can understand how the program works, and you can see whether it has any backdoors or security holes in it. So this is something that's really important part of the message, is if you're going to trust somebody with your health data or any important personal data, then the person that you should start with is you. Does that make sense to people?
It does make a lot of sense. And actually, whether you are a computer scientist or you are a technologist and you know about different operating systems, whatever, that is very good. But it's also narrow. It's a bit reductionist in terms of who can actually benefit of that. We should go one step further and say, hey, if this is community oriented and this is community led, probably it's going to be good. Talking about sovereignty, we are talking about, is that sovereignty resides on the community, resides on the commons, resides on the people, then we are doing well. And you brought up a very good point. If we are taking away the technology from the hands of the US big tech, but we are putting it in the hands of European big tech, whether it's in the UK or in France or in Spain. We are in the same. And probably we are not going to advance much as a society. Now, if we say, hey, point one, this is, of course, free software, but also it's community oriented, then we are going to be giving the right steps to move forward and to advance into a sustainable ecosystem, not just for public health, but for public administrations in general. And I think that that concept of community oriented makes a huge change, because we saw it. I mean, these guys are just trying to make money out of everything. You know, when they started, let's not call it free software, let's call it open source. And they came up with all this bullcrap of this concept. Again, they are putting pragmatism there. They are trying to make money out of a very noble movement, you know, that deals with equity, that deals with camaraderie, that deals with community. And yeah, I mean, remember Red Hat or whatever, huge companies that they are today in the stock markets. And that perverts the concept of community, where the source is going to be available or part of the source is going to be available, whatever, is not community oriented anymore. They might take advantage of the community for their own greedy, selfish agenda, but it's not a community oriented project. For me, that's sovereignty, you know? It's like this in the hands of the people. Yeah. Not in the hands of the governments, but in the hands of the people. And that is what I try to make with GNU Health, you know, some sort of confederation of different people working in many different places around the world, but with the whole idea of equity, freedom, and privacy in healthcare.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about this word that you've used several times, pragmatism. There's a version of it that I really dislike, which is convenience, because I always think that when you opt for convenience, you're robbing yourself of something, and convenience is a vice rather than a virtue. And but it's something that we uphold as a positive value in society, for better or worse. People say, I want convenience. If they're able to buy very cheap technology that's available now, and then it's wonderful that it is cheap, very powerful sensor technology that you can put on your wrist or onto a smartphone and things like that. And you can get it from China for less than a day's wages. This is very, very convenient. And this very convenient hardware comes pre-installed with proprietary software that makes it very easy to just switch it on and connect it, say, to an Apple account or a Google account or something like that. So the big tech dominance is already built in to the device, almost its manufacturer. How do we tackle that pragmatism, that convenience, to give people a more secure, private, and better experience? How does GNU Health approach that problem?
Yeah, it's hard, but it's what we've been doing all along since almost 20 years from now. And in the end, it comes down to educating people and saying, hey, you know, you can wait a week. It's not going to be the end of the world. You may even have to pay a little bit more, but in the end, you are going to have a much better, not in terms maybe of technology, but in terms of benefits that it provides you, in terms of privacy, in terms of who do you want to share that information with, in terms of transparency, right? I think that's another important term. It's a very hard, because it's not only a matter of convenience. People see it also with this social pressure prism, right? Where, hey, you know, if I cannot share this information on whatever social media, I'm going to be out of, you know, the trending or whatever it is. I have two kids, Carol and Gabby. They were born in the early 2000s, and they had to fight against this social pressure because they were using LibreOffice to show, you know, whatever presentation at school or whatever. And their teachers and even their classmates would say, hey, what weird things are you bringing here? Yeah, it took a little bit of time, but in the end, they came up stronger. And they keep on using free software in their universities. They are now graduated, one is a physician, whatever. And the concept in here is we have to put in balance that convenience and that pragmatism, even at an age where you know that social pressure is so important for teenagers. They say, hey, you know, this is more important for you. And, you know, in the end, they brought up those tools and to put in front of the teacher and to put in front of the classmate and say, hey, you know, we are using this because this is better for us. This is better for our privacy. This is better. We don't having to depend on a big tech decision after. So that's the same message we're trying to put for the society and the end users today. It's like, watch it. You know, whatever is so fast, whatever is so cheap, somebody is going to pay for that extra. We need to deliver devices that allow us to put personal health records that respect the user freedom and privacy. That is not simple, but in the end of the day, we are advancing. And you say before, things are changing. Young people are changing this dynamic and this momentum. And I'm quite excited about it.
Yeah, me too. I'm very interested in the way that culture is changing right now. And that we see not just pushback, but almost an entire changing of mindset amongst young people. I think we're very cynical as adults, and especially when we've been in the trenches with software freedom and civic cybersecurity and things for a long time, that we've developed many of these cynical outlooks that things like, well, people don't care about privacy. And I'm not seeing that in young people. I'm seeing quite spontaneously, not just a generation who are turning away from smartphones and turning away from easy convenience and quick social conformity, but they're really relishing that being different, and they're really relishing that the freedom to carve out a different kind of technological identity. And I think that medicine, well, intimate personal information, like in the medical field, you're actually in a position of great opportunity because people may be dismissive about their privacy when it comes to what nightclub they visited or, you know, where they went on holiday and things like that. And they, to a certain extent, accept some level of surveillance as part of this horrible surveillance capitalism. But when it comes to things like medicine, that's a completely different field. There's something different going on there. And intuitively, instinctively, young people are saying no to that. I'm not happy with that. And I'm not going to do that. So there is a sea change going on.
Yeah. And I think that if we think maybe 5-10 years from now, many of these kids will be legislators. You know, they will be in the governments. And they will say, hey, you know, what we have been doing until now has been wrong. And we need total transparency that will actually make the huge change. Because, you know, standards or whatever they call are always biased due to these big tech guys that are actually taking control.
So you're collecting a huge amount of data from all around the world, from lots of customers. How do you store that, and where do you keep it safe, and what team looks after it? Are you popping it on a cloud server? Is it in your own server? Do you have a team that, you know, does regular pen testing? How do you keep that data secure?
That's a very good point. And one of them is, where do you want to put that data, right? So we start always by on your own device, right? That should be first point. Is like, can I run GNU Health on my own device? Me as an individual or being me as a health institution? And the answer is yes, of course. And you should. You know, you shouldn't put this on clouds. You shouldn't, unless it's your own infrastructure, right? Mm-hmm. But putting this information into Amazon or whatever, it's an aberration. It doesn't make sense, because all that we've been talking today is like, make sure that that information is not shared with people that shouldn't be reading it. You shouldn't be putting in the clouds of these big tech guys.
So you're not centralizing all of the data into one location to then run, you know, other data sets from?
So we have different levels of sharing information in terms of, imagine that you are a hospital and you have your own GNU Health server there, mm-hmm. and then you have human resources and your physicians, nurses, psychologists, lab, or whatever. And you say, well, this information is going to reside only on this server. And that's perfect. That's perfectly fine. It runs your hospital infrastructure. It runs your patients' clinical histories and whatever. Now, what happens if instead of just one hospital, I said, I want to create a network for the whole country? And that's where the federation comes up. So what the federation does is some sort of a hub that allows different individuals or health institutions to share information, even patients, within that federated, distributed network in your country, you know. So, and again, this is all outside the cloud and outside all this big tech stuff. This is your own cloud, whether it's at individual level or whether it's at government level.
That's a good question. So I think there's an assumption going on these days about how computer programs work, how do digital services work? And we've moved from the rather simple idea that you own a computer and you run a computer program on your personal device. And that if you do so, then given that there are no network insecurities, that data remains within your control. And that data stays on your personal device. And very slowly, we've moved into an era where almost all of the things that we do with computing, sorry, many of the things that we do with computing have become online services, where the program actually runs on somebody else's server. And that raises the question, what is that other person doing to secure your data, given that the cloud computing is your data on somebody else's computer? But what you're saying, Louis, is that with GNU Health, you're able to move back to that older paradigm, which is in many ways superior in terms of privacy and security, that the program just runs locally on your device, yeah?
Exactly. It runs locally on your device, whether it's your mobile phone or whether it's your, you know, server at your hospital or laboratory, but it also allows you to share information within the GNU Health Federation. And this has also a practical benefit. Imagine, well, one of the things we also created in GNU Health is like equity, right? Equity in terms of, if you are a poor country that has, you know, no means of having any other system because of the licenses that they put or whatever, they say, oh, we see GNU Health that allow us to run this without paying licenses. Of course, from the philosophical point of view, that's not what we want, because it's not a matter of price, but it's a matter of freedom. But anyways, many of the GNU Health users start with that, saying, okay, it's free. Now, what this brings is the possibility of saying institution A shares the data with the institution B, so the patient record is always updated, no matter where you are in the country. And for doing so, you don't need Google, you don't need Amazon, you don't need any of these big tech guys. You only need network of distributed GNU Health instances across your country. And of course, information will be sent securely, and also within the ring of the people, and that also includes which health professionals are allowed to see your data. And that is a very important point also, but yeah, that brings also legal concepts on it. But it's not just can we encrypt the information, but who can actually access that information? Is just your physician, is just your family physician, your psychologist, your psychiatrist, or is the whole system of health in the country? But for that, what we deliver, it's a framework that you can customize to your current legislation.
Great, let's talk about that, because there are many interesting competing spheres of interest that are in tension. Think about one of them, which is the enormous research potential for all of society, the collective value of health data, which can be analysed in aggregate, and we can make really interesting research findings, advance medicine that way. And this is something clearly that governments want to do, but these same issues of access control and who is able to decrypt what data and how they're able to share it is something that is being explored, say, within the National Health Service here in the UK. But it's complicated by the tentacles of big tech and over-involvement in for-profit foreign companies, which want to buy the data to then sell to other research groups that may be doing fantastic work. But the problem is that is not consensual. It's not something that people have opted into. It's just something that's been imposed upon them. And by doing that, what governments are actually doing is driving people away from health services, because privacy concerns are huge. And they're driving people away, not only from sharing things with their GP, but from contributing to potentially very valuable collective research projects. Now, there was a number of advanced cryptographic technologies that help with this, things like k-anonymity and zero knowledge proofs and things like that. Could you say a little bit about some of the more interesting features of GNU Health, which would actually help governments to federate collective health data in a way which preserves the privacy and dignity of the users?
Yeah, sure. So let's talk about the personal health record, right? So it's probably the easiest way to picture it. So imagine that we run MyNewHealth on your mobile device, and let's put it in the context of genetics. And you have a particular mutation or natural variant that you want to share either with your physician or a particular research institution that will find a cure for that natural variant, right? So you as an individual, whatever record that you have, we call it a page of life, which in the end makes a book of life of all these events related to your health, whether it's social determinants or just more at the molecular base, right? But you have the freedom of saying, I want to keep this record private and that will never leave my device, or I want to share it with somebody, whether it's my physician or whether it's this institution that works on genetics to find a cure. So that is already in every single node, whether it's a personal health record or whether it's a hospital information system or a lab information system. Now, that is the way of sharing information. The other part about this, how do we actually encrypt and how do we actually allow somebody and not others to see what I have on my hospital's databases, right? And we use for that technologies such as GNU Privacy Guard, right? So it's a public crypto and allows you not only to encrypt, but also to sign medical documents, right? From the very starting point, you as an individual have the opportunity or the freedom to say, I want to keep this particular event of my life, that what I call that page of life, private, or I want to share it with this particular person.
That's good. Thank you very much for that. I think that that is an excellent explanation for regular listeners. It would be really nice to talk about this issue of anxiety and over-monitoring. Some people have wearables and they become quite obsessed with their health to the extent that that is sort of unhealthy. And this issue of what kind of data in the hands of a layperson is more dangerous than good. And the fact that really sometimes a qualified physician is the only person really who should interpret that.
Can that become a thing where we monitor our health too much, maybe our heart rate so much, that actually it starts to cause fluctuations in our heart rate because we're anxious or we're nervous about that, or it starts to impede in other ways. So we might decide that we actually don't want to go and do some exercise, or we do want to go and do more exercise, and we're doing too much or too little as a result of those ratings. Do you see that?
I, and again, I would say the perversion of the reality and the change of the reality brought by these huge big tech guys. You know, they put all these bells and whistles, which from the clinical point of view has not that much importance. And they are taking away the very human factor, which is, hey, just go to your physician or go to your nurse or go to your psychologist and don't rely too much on gadgets, because it's such a reductionist way of envisioning health by just looking at a couple of readings from your mobile. Or what makes even worse, when you now sit down and ask whatever AI engine about those readings. Before it was Google, right? Everybody was like, I see that in my office. They come and they say, hey, Google told me that. Now it came even worse because it's not just Google, it's whatever AI delivered to the person. So it's not technology, but who's behind that technology? And it's clearly a huge business behind this. And the anxiety is creating on the people that is actually reading this, you know, when they come to your office with the answer and say, why did you come? If you think that you already have the answer, why do you actually come to? So basically, technology is dehumanizing humans and trying to humanize machines, which is futile and stupid. But of course, it's a huge business for those that are behind that sort of technology. As health providers, we have to educate people, our colleagues, our patients, and say, you know, medicine is a social science. And if you take the social part out of it, if you take the human factor out of medicine, we can call it whatever, but it's not medicine anymore. And that is what this crypto brothers trying to do. It's just a matter of time where this new generation knows about the dangers of big tech. And hopefully this AI bubble will burst, the sooner the better, because it's really creating a lot of damage to ourselves as individuals, to our society, and to Mother Nature. I'm optimistic that soon we will be able to regain control of our health and our freedom as a society.
This issue of who is behind the technology and optimism, you mentioned optimism, and I think that all of us, we're all at heart tech optimists. It's just that our vision, our optimism is a different kind of optimism. I'm optimistic that big tech will fail. I'm optimistic that good technology will prevail. And sometimes we're accused of being Luddites or anti-progressives because we don't like the vision of technology that's unfolding. But again and again now, I'm hearing people recognizing that it's not the technology that's the problem. It's the people behind it, as you said. And that is a huge bit of social progress, in my opinion.
Thanks, Andy. Yeah, absolutely. I fully agree. It's not a problem of the technology itself. It's how that technology is being delivered and how the media is putting all that 24/7 in people's mind. And And I think that, I mean, program like yours is so important, so important. Not just us, but also kids listen to that. And they will be the ones that are going to be making the change. So again, it's as important the message that we deliver as the technology that we deliver. They have to go together. Technology without the message is nothing.
Thanks so much for joining us today, Noe.
Yeah, thank you.
Helen and Andy, thank you so much, both of you. It's, you know, it's talking about optimism. You bring us, you know, that message of keep on working for freedom, for equity, for the dignity of people after all, you know, around the world. And programs like yours certainly go in that direction. So thank you so much for having me today. You take care now.
Mm-hmm. Cheers. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye. This is